today. Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning, depending on what time zone you are in these United States of America, on October the 13th on the West Coast, or already now, October the 14th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We have a return guest tonight to the show. It's been a little while since he's been on. He's had his own radio show recently on Republic Broadcasting Network, and then all of a sudden he had a show on We the People Radio Network. And as yours truly did for, I think, the world's record, 2 days as an affiliate, I myself have been on both of those networks, but WTPRN, I think I hold the world's shortest affiliate relationship. It's got to be a Guinness Book record here on this network. This gentleman actually opened up the door so I could set that record. And he's been on Evident Footprints before. We're going to have a ball tonight. Plus, we're going to get down to some serious business. He's a good friend, a patriot. Through and through, he has hosted his own show, as I mentioned, The American Awakening, and he has a website called theamericanawakening.org, my good friend Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you very much for inviting me back, Don. It's always a pleasure to be on your program, my friend. I have to tell you, yes, as you know, I did a tenure on RBN for about a year and a half, and of course, as I was, well, shall we say, dismissed, within 2 days, my telephone rang, and it was the We the People Network that picked me up, and I was there for a couple of months, and there was a couple of guys that owned it, and there was some, inner behind-the-scenes problems going on there, and ultimately, what's funny about this, as you know, is that I woke up last Monday morning, and I got a call from you, and you informed me that I didn't have a radio show anymore. The network themselves didn't inform me, but it's interesting to say that, because it seems like that as we watch, with this bailout, Don, that just happened last week, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit here tonight. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting things going on in the alternative radio world, if you will. Talk show hosts are getting dismissed, talk show hosts are getting fired, there's new talk show hosts that are coming up on networks that really don't fit the bill of being on the type of network that they're being put on, and it makes me scratch my head in wonderment, because since I've left, since they closed the doors with We the People Network, I've had several offers to come up and do radio shows, to commit to a spot, and as you know, Don, it's a big commitment. When you commit to a radio show, and I'll tell the listening audience, you make a commitment. There's a lot of work that goes into it. You know that. Mm-hmm. And I've had several offers from different networks, and I haven't, I haven't pulled the trigger on any, because I've taken a bit of a sabbatical to come back and reflect on what's been happening. Why am I really doing this? Why are you doing this? What we're doing this for is we're trying to wake people up, because there's a monster lurking there that is gaining great ground, if you will, to turn this into a fascist state. And they have literally pushed us over the cliff financially with this bailout. And so I'm looking back at this, and I'm looking at this monster, but then behind the scenes with some of these alternative networks, I'm seeing that, you know, there's what I might consider bigger monsters in some of these arenas than the ones we're facing, you know?
Really?
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you and I have talked several times about how we wish that we could reciprocate, and we always have. For example, you know, We the People Network, I had you on my program a couple, 3 weeks ago, and I always tout your website. I always tell them what radio broadcast, you know, what station you're on, BBS Radio, and you do the same for me, and it's only right to do that. And that gives people the choice to be able to go and look at your website, to be able to listen to your show, decide whether they want to invite their friends. Unfortunately, there are a couple of these major networks out here that, interestingly enough, will not do that. Not only will they censor Don, but they also make it a point not to allow myself or any host on the network, if we have a guest that's another talk show host, to even mention where they are, or a lot of times even mention their website. What are your thoughts on that, Don?
Well, I think it's immature, for one thing, and I think it's a sign that somebody's got an inferiority complex that they would even entertain, treating their hosts that way, or their guests, or any of the content. You know, when you talk about freedom, and you're promoting freedom across the nation, does it end at a radio show? Does it end with a network? I don't think so. And I think we have a duty, we have a responsibility to each other to share information. And it makes sense that a network or a station, whatever you want to call it, is going to reciprocate and share information with other people. We're putting this signal out for anybody that will listen. Why would we limit what networks or what stations could hear this information? I think it should be done appropriately, though, with proper attribution and recognition for who's producing the content. I don't think it's licensed to steal, but it seems like there's a lot of that going on, too, isn't there?
Well, that's true. I mean, I visualize, and I could be wrong here. I'm a button pusher. And if I tune into a radio show and, you know, they don't have a guest on that I've heard before or I don't like, or, you know, that the guest or that the host is somebody that I just don't like their voice or whatever it is, you know, I'll flip around and I'll find somebody that I, you know, has somebody on that is interesting to talk to. And I think that most people are that way. And I noticed as some of these offers have been coming in, some of these smaller networks, you know, I've gotten offers from networks I didn't even know existed. You know, all of a sudden I get an email in the mail and say, you know, TruthNet Radio or something like that. And I say, who's those people? I never heard of them. But in talking to these people, which I've spoken with a lot of them, they tell me the first thing is that they don't censor. Second thing is that and I'm talking about the smaller networks here. They have no problem reciprocating with other networks, simulcasting, or whatever that you would like to do. What I find interesting, though, Don, it seems like the large networks get caught with some kind of a bug. I don't know what that bug may be. Maybe they're infiltrated? I don't know. But what happens is, I think when you get up to a certain point, you're either approached by somebody on the other side, or you get on an ego trip. Something happens to you mentally. And you start becoming condescending to your hosts. You start censoring what they say. And you start, just trying to control them. It's interesting that, and I'll give you an example, and I'm not saying anything against the owner of this network because I don't know the man personally. I had a conversation with him. But I find it interesting that not a month ago, this man, I heard him come on the airwaves on his own network and defend one of his talk show hosts and alleviate a rumor that he had no intentions of getting rid of this particular host and that this particular host had a home with him for as long as he wanted it, and he was really thrilled to have this host with him, and he'd been there for 2.5, 3 years, whatever it was. And then I find out that the day that my network closed its doors, the same host that this man was touting and talking so fairly about, he fired. And what's interesting is this same host, the owner of the network of which closed its doors, mm-hmm. had told me that if this particular host ever got fired, that he was going to make a spot for him on his network. So as soon as that network closed, this host or this owner of this major network fires the guy. So, you know, you step back for a moment, you take a deep breath, you scratch your head, and you just don't know what to believe anymore. Because, you know, the airwaves lend an element of credibility to the host.
Yeah. You know that. let's make it clear to the listening audience. You're not, when you say this network, you're referring to a network, not BBS radio.
No, I'm referring to all networks out there. Now, the hosts come on these networks. They mm-hmm. come because they bring a particular expertise. They have a particular knowledge in a certain area. Some of them, like myself, are conduits. I just have, you know, the ability to interview particular people and be able to draw out of them, you know, specifics and relate it to the listening audience. So we all have our particular expertise. And that being said, there's a reason why we're here. And along with that, the listening audience, you know, feels that, you know, there's an element of credibility, integrity that goes along with that, and as it should be. But I find in taking this deep breath and this sabbatical, if you will, behind the scenes since I bowed out of it, that a lot of what goes on behind the scenes with some of these people, they're not in it for the right reasons. And as you know, Don, you got into this the same reasons that I got into this. I got into this to bring the truth. There was a burning desire in me when I woke up to find, and I found out what was really going on, as opposed to being a dumbed-down American, that I needed to share with my brothers and sisters, you know, fellow Americans, what's going on here, and, mm-hmm. as have you. And that's doing it for the right reasons. But there are people out there who are not doing it for the right reasons. And I will say this straight up. For those people, I would say, you know, you should go find yourself another job. Because what this is all about is this is about trying to bring our country back together, trying to put a constitutional republic back together, and trying to get rid of these monsters that are selling us out. And that's all I have to say about that, as Forrest Gump would say.
Well, you know, Michael, as I'm listening to you, I'm considering my position in this movement amongst the guys that like to call themselves patriots. And you know, I handle a variety of topics, and I think it goes beyond just patriotism, what I cover and what my interests lie in, because really these things are all interwoven. The life experience is not just in one area. It's not just in the area of government or corrupt government or the military or giving your life to your country. There's a lot of other things going on in the universe besides that. And that is important, and that is a major part of life, especially when you have someone who is trying to overthrow the government and take it over and turn the world into a slave society. Yes, we must pay attention to what's going on. But what is occurring on this planet and what people are willing to admit to themselves is occurring are two different things. You have a lot of people in the patriot movement that can only think of guns and knives and bombs and martial arts and documents, parchments, you know, things that laws are written on, and maybe some military uniforms, maybe a canteen and a pup tent and some K rations. They're thinking in that sense, and I'm not saying that that's wrong, but there's more to life and to existence than just that, than meeting a battle, going into battle, or ending a battle. There's a lot more to it, much, much more to it than that. And so I don't fit some of these groups. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that they would necessarily take, you know, on a posse, you know, to go hunt down a traitor or something, you know, with a militia or something. But that doesn't mean that I don't abide by the same principles. In fact, much of my work spans a lot more of what the real issues are than what these people see. So we have a patriot movement that's sort of blinded by this, you know, the actual combat attitude of, well, you know, we should be free, but they're coming to take our rights away, so it's time to get out in the streets or hide behind the rocks and the trees and load your muskets. That's not necessarily in anyone's best interest, that approach. Well, that's certainly what this government and other governments are doing going around the world, taking over other countries. So this is a spiritual battle. This is spiritual.
And I was just about to go there, because what we're talking about here is we're talking about, you know, an elevated consciousness, which we've talked about many times before, both on your program on my shows. And I want to bring this out to your listening audience, because I think this is rather funny. I had Don on my show, it was last week before last, and I was talking about the bailout. And, the bailout had just happened, and they went from $700 billion to $850 billion or whatever. And you'd called into the show, Don, I believe, that day, and you'd said, yes, I believe I had another guest on. I can't remember exactly how it went down. But
well, there's a guy from Texas named Andrew who called in. I remember that.
Okay,
And Janet Phelan was on, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, at any rate, they had just got through, you know, talking about the bailout was passed, blah, 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 and you came on. And this was last week sometime. And you came on and you said, yes, and the majority of the money went to the foreign banks. And you just kind of took me by surprise, and I'm scratching my head and going, wait a minute here. Okay, wait a minute. This bailout is supposed to be to put these banks back together, these banks that are in trouble and these mortgage companies that are in trouble. And here I find out at the G7 summit that they just called the other day, you know, which is only a few days ago, they've got all of these foreigners, and they all have these terrible looks on their face. And they're all standing up there while George Bush is at the podium. And they're giving the money to other banks. So you were right. You were right all along. I didn't even know it. You know, but that comes into your elevated state of consciousness, okay, where you know, you do the research, you go down the rabbit hole a lot more than I do. I'm not that much of a researcher as I am a conduit. But what's interesting about this, and I was looking online tonight, matter of fact, I pulled up an article here, and I don't want to get off track, because I knew we were going to get into this. You know,
no, we can talk about anything. You're on track.
Oh, okay.
Well, as long as the compliments are coming out, you're on track.
Oh, all right. Well, there we go. All right. Well, we're on the same page. But I'm looking at this, you know, and they're talking about bailing out these, you know, these companies that are in trouble. They needed the $700 or $850 billion, and they were threatening the congressman with martial law if it didn't happen. And what's interesting is as soon as the bailout happened, you know, the stock market fell, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 points, which is to the tune of a couple trillion dollars, right? And I'm looking at this article here out of Bloomberg, and I'm scratching my head again because I'm going, wait a minute, you know, $250 billion of this $850 billion are going to nine major banks that aren't even in trouble. I mean, that's not funny. I mean, let me name these off. J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, J.P. Morgan Chase is the one that bought up Bear Stearns. You know, they're the ones that are buying these people up. And by the way, they're buying them up only after the board members are getting their substantial bonuses and they're slithering back into the woodwork before they go into bankruptcy, because if they went into bankruptcy, then they have to give it back. So J.P. Morgan Chase comes and buys them out. America Corp, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, State Street Corp, New York Mellon Bank, Merrill Lynch, all these great big humongous companies, right, that aren't in trouble at all. They're getting $250 billion. Explain that to me, will you? Tell me, you know, elevate your consciousness for a minute and tell me about this.
Well, it's the very money laundering that I warned against. You see, the issue has to do with stolen funds being in offshore accounts, and now that we have the Basel II agreement, they have to show source of funds. The mainstream media will not touch this with a 10-foot pole, or a 10-mile pole, for that matter. They have been bribed, actually, to keep it out. In fact, out of this money, I've heard now that they've gotten another $10 or $15 billion to keep it under wraps. Yet it came out at the IMF meeting, didn't it? It came out. In fact, Christopher Story was there and asked the question, point blank, regarding the money, in particular, and this was Steinbrück was the guy's name, a German paymaster. He's affiliated with I'm sure Deutsche Bank is one of the banks, and Christopher Story came right out and asked him. He held on to the microphone and said, when are you going to talk about the corruption of this administration, this American administration, and the fact that this money that has been raised to save these banks is actually a payoff to the G7 countries? And he said he knew nothing about that, and they hadn't talked about that. And then he asked the question, Christopher held on to the mic and said, have you ever talked about this with the G7 countries? And then he started, you know, and Christopher was paraphrasing this, but he was alluding to the fact that, well, at some point in the past, they had discussed this. Well, you're darn tootin' they had. The Queen of England said, for the sake of humanity on this planet, do the right thing and pay that money. They hadn't paid the money. We got this bailout, they got their bailout, and it went from, remember, the ridiculous $700 billion to $850 billion. Now they just tacked on another $150 billion right after that, within a couple of days. So now it's up to $1 trillion. And the press is talking about $700 billion bailout. No, it's $1 trillion now. And they helped themselves to $150 billion twice since the initial bill was turned down by the House. Now, that said, the stock market the next day after this $850 billion bailout went through, the stock market fell, what was it, 700 points or something close to 700 points?
Right. The first day was 700 and something. The next day was, I think, 500 and something. And I think it went down another 300 and something the following day, if I remember correctly.
That was the foreign country doing that. Okay? In other words, they hadn't gotten their payment, even though they knew they had the money. They knew that the American government had basically gotten licensed to steal in broad daylight. You know, I've used the analogy, this is like catching a bank robber blowing up the safe in an underground vault, getting caught, digging tunnels, and you know, like in the movies, okay? And they take him into court and they say, okay, here, listen. We don't want you to blow up the safe anymore. We don't want you digging tunnels underneath all these buildings. Here are the keys to the bank. Here's the combination to the safe. In fact, we'll give you the trucks. You can just pull them right up there and just load the trucks up as you steal.
Just leave the building intact.
Yes. That's basically what they've done. Okay? Now, the reason the stock market went down, and several times it's done this, is because they're not making payments. This is literally what they did. They orchestrated this from Europe, and I'm sure the Chinese were involved in it too. These foreign countries got together and orchestrated this takedown of the stock market as a warning to say, look what we can do. Now,
go ahead.
I was just going to say you've got this militaristic posturing going on around Iran and the Black Sea.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to toss that into the mix, because you're saying, well, yes, this is sent out as a warning. And so as soon as you say that, the red flag goes up the pole, and I go, okay, wait a minute, you know, because, the Israel has been, you know, putting as much pressure as they can on the United States to attack Iran. They want to do it while Bush is in office, because they know he's a warmonger. But I'm looking at this article in Haaretz.com, okay, which Haaretz is, you know, that's a Jewish newspaper. And what's interesting, have you heard this conspiracy theory about the Lehman Brothers collapse? The anti-Semitic conspiracy theory about the $400 billion that was shuffled off to Israel out of the Lehman Brothers collapse. And I'm looking at this article in here, and they're putting it in here as a conspiracy theory. But Lehman Brothers was Jewish officials. I mean, there were Jewish officials at the Lehman Brothers Investment Bank. They passed their clients' money on to three Israeli banks with the intention of them then escaping to Israel to enjoy the take without fear of extradition. Well, they're writing this like it's a conspiracy theory. But on the flip side of that, I'm looking at all of these companies that are going down like dominoes, and I'm talking about, you know, Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, all these companies that are falling. And interestingly enough, just before they go down, their executives are taking, you know, millions, tens of millions of dollars out in bonuses. I think one of these companies, the latest one went down. What was it?
AIG. You're going to mention.
Okay, but their company, they took a $440,000 trip, you know, and they had meals. I mean, their dinner bills were like $20,000, $30,000, something like that. $440,000, okay, in like 5 days or something, with their top executives. This is after Okay, this is after they got in trouble just before they're bought out. And so this is going on all over the place. And then I see this conspiracy theory of fault the Jews for Lehman Brothers collapse. Well, is it a conspiracy theory or is it not? And I'm not pointing a finger at the Jews or Heretz or anybody else. I'm just saying, and by the way, you know, have you ever looked at the structure of the Federal Reserve and who owns it, who the board, the shareholders are in the Federal Reserve Bank?
Mm-hmm.
Lehman Brothers is right in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you have these major players who are certain of the bank members. Well, the one aspect that they don't tell anybody about is that the depository trust clearinghouse company, which is this secret faction at 55 Water Street in New York, which has trillions and trillions of dollars. They used to be the clearinghouse for all the checks. And now they've outlawed checks as a method, and they're just going full-blown credit, in other words. It's got to be credited. You can't pay the bills with treasury or let's say debts with treasury bills. Pretty interesting.
You can't pay them with treasury bills. So what are they paying with? They can't pay them with a check because the checks they don't trust the banks. The checks might bounce. So what are they paying with?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. They're giving up infrastructure is what they're doing.
You know, I tell you, I don't mean to cut you off, but you know what I really can't wrap my head around is that you know, we know they're printing all this money. They're creating it out of thin air. There is no intrinsic value to these FRNs. It's nothing more than a keystroke on a keyboard, or it's just, you know, FRNs that are printed off a printing press. But there's no intrinsic value to it. Okay, so all of these billions that are being printed off, you know, they create it out of nothing. And so, you know, they can create as much as they want. And correct me if I'm wrong, but did I not see or hear that they have totally gotten rid of now, in part of this bailout bill, they have totally gotten rid of the fractional reserve requirements. They're no longer existent. In other words, the banks used to have to keep 10% on hand for what they can lend. Well, that's gone.
That was actually over the past year and a half, or almost 2 years, that was down to 2%. So, you know, on $100,000, they only had to have $2,000 cash on hand. That's been for quite a while.
Okay, but, so go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's down to basically nothing. But there's another aspect to this too. It's not just, first of all, they're not clearing the checks anymore. They're not the clearinghouse for the checks, and the Federal Reserve notes now have become Federal Reserve securities, FRSs. And what they do is all the stock gets rewritten into a subsidiary of the DTCC called Seed, CEDE, and Company, as when you seed to another. And so a broker can say, okay, well, this is going to be signed over to Seed and Company. Don't worry about it. This is normal procedure. This is how we facilitate this. And if they want to give you money, they'll give it to you. And if they don't, they have every legal right to keep it because they hoodwinked you. And so the same corporation, DTCC, is also owning all the stock in the stock market, unless you actually physically have it in your hand.
Okay.
So this is a pretty big secret. Now, as of 1999, the DTCC had done over $19 trillion in transactions. That was in 99. And now we know that, you know, they're multiplying this. It's probably 19 to the 19th power.
Well, I can tell you this. As a matter of fact, I was pulling up some articles here. I was reading it just here a little prior before going on the program here tonight. The actual amount of the derivative market, you know, the hedge funds, the collateralized debt options and so forth, are somewhere between $1 and $2 quadrillion. So this $850, which turned into a $1 trillion bailout, is a drop in the bucket. It's one thousandth of what the real risk or the real, you know, catastrophe is going to be. So, you know, the way I view this is that, you know, what is the old saying, the last thing that the pirates do or the politicians do before they, you know, bring down a country is they loot it. They take all its assets, and that's what's going on right now. And that extends into the gold market. You know, it's fantastic because you watch these severe gyrations in the market, and you see the market just diving exponentially, 700 points one day, 500 mm-hmm. points the next day. Then I look at gold, and gold's going down as well. This is absolutely absurd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people pull out of the market, they're going to put it into commodities. But when people get antsy or they get concerned about their portfolios, they pull them out. They put them in something that's more substantial, i.e., gold or silver, or maybe copper, or you know,
and that's
like
disappearing
gold.
Too.
Well, but here's the thing. What's funny is this: is that the market's dropping, the gold is dropping. Even the market goes up, the gold still went down. All right. So, but the interesting thing about that, Don, is that the gold is dropping. But you can't buy any. I called around to about a half a dozen coin shops the other day, and nobody's got any gold. You know, so what I see happening here is they're driving the price of the gold. You know, plunge protection team is coming in here. They're driving the price of the gold down. They're driving it down as far as they can buy it, and as soon as they get it down there, they buy it all up. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The coin shop everywhere. Okay? And so you can't buy any. Now, if you can buy it, they're putting a premium on it. Not only are they putting a substantial premium on it, but a lot of times you have to wait for it. And I think the actual price of gold right now, as far as the government says, is $850 an ounce. But if you try to buy it from a coin dealer, they'll charge you about $1,030 to $1,050 an ounce. So there's premiums that are being put on this gold, sometimes up to upwards of $1,100 an ounce, which is the real value of gold.
Yeah.
You know, so that being said, does it make sense, and I'm just analyzing this, does it make sense to you that they're deliberately driving the price down to gold so the people will say, I don't want this as... you know, losing value, they sell it off, all the elites step in, they buy it all up, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's no gold left to be bought. Now, speaking of that gold, one other quick thing before we move on here.
Well they're buying it up with free money, don't forget about that. They
and,
just
well,
got
and,
bailed
and
out.
And that's another thing you have to throw in the mix. Now, let's just say for the sake of discussion that you want to go down to the coin shop and they actually did have gold. It's
mm-hmm.
going to cost you $1,000, $1,100 an ounce to buy an ounce of gold. But these criminals are printing the money. So
mm-hmm.
since it only costs about 3 cents to print a $100 bill, what does that, let's see, 3 times 8 is 24, it costs them about 25 cents to buy an ounce of gold. I mean, them, mm-hmm. it costs 25, because they're the ones who print the money to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that's not quite fair about this. You know, how many ounces of gold can they buy with the 850 that you would buy? That'd be 4 times the 4, that'd be 400, 500 ounces of gold.
What makes you think they're buying it? Maybe they're just outright stealing it.
That could be as well. I mean,
right?
let's the biggest question at hand here is, when are the American people going to wake up and realize how badly they've been fleeced? And I point a finger at the people that have the 401ks, the 403bs, the IRAs, and so forth, where the regulatory agencies lock their money up. They can't get access to it until they're 59 and a half. And by the way, did you see Barack Obama's new tax plan to bail them out, saying, well, he's going to alleviate the penalties in 2008 and 2009 if he's elected?
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, yeah. But the point is, they lock this money up. I have a friend in California who's got about $500,000 in a 401k, and he's my age. He's 58. You know, I talked to him about buying gold. He doesn't want to buy it because there's a penalty for it. So he's going to wait till he's 59 and a half. Well, you and I both know by the time he's 59 and a half, there isn't going to be anything left, because look at what's happening to the market. But this is what they've done. They have got literally, how many trillions of dollars do people who have pension funds, Americans who have worked all their life with their pension funds and their 401ks and so forth, that are going to be eaten away? And
mm-hmm.
there's going to be civil unrest, which is exactly why they deployed this brigade from Iraq, okay, just in case there's civil unrest. Now, let's put all this together, and I want to take your elevated consciousness here for a minute. We got a brigade that's coming back from Iraq that is being deployed in the United States for, quote, civil unrest. We have the executive order that George Bush signed, what was it, in 2006 or 2007, making it easy for any emergency anywhere in the world to declare martial law. We have these people who, the stock market went from a high of 14,000 down to, well, it's 9,000 now, it was 8,000 yesterday. You know, they start eating into people's money to the tune that they're doing right now, and I can very easily foresee rioting in the streets. Take all this into the mix, Don, and we've got, what, 3.5 weeks to an election? Now,
mm-hmm.
do you think, in your elevated consciousness, that George Bush, George and Dick, are arrogant enough, and they have enough hubris to literally pull the trigger and cancel those elections or suspend them and declare martial law? Do you think that's a viable possibility?
Well, it seems to me that I mentioned something along that line on your show about 2 years ago, if you remember. In fact, it was in October of 2006 when I was telling you that China had pulled $32 trillion out of the CHIPS accounts. You remember that?
Well, it wasn't in October of 2006 because I didn't go on RBN until March 2007.
Or maybe it was 2007, maybe.
Okay.
2007. September and October of 2007, I think, is when it happened. Pretty sure that was the time.
I vaguely remember something about the Chinese were really, really mad.
They pulled out $1 trillion a day for 32 straight days. Now, every time they pulled out $1 trillion, any loans from $100 million and up were off the books. So by the time they did that, you can pretty much add up the amount of money in the trillions of dollars and know that any loans from $100 million up on an international scale were outright refused on that basis. Now, that put a damper on the credit, didn't it? Because they had to shift all of that blame on us. And you might remember me saying at the time we were about 1.4 to 1.5 quadrillion upside down in the Federal Reserve. I say we, I mean it's them. But in other words, they have that much of a deficit in the Federal Reserve. There's that much money they've printed that's not backed by any collateral other than what they have given up of our real estate or our mortgages or deposits.
Right.
And those deposits were primarily in the hedge funds and the derivatives put in offshore accounts. Now, when Basel II came about, and the reason I'm explaining this, I'm going to sort of answer your question in this. When Basel II accord was passed, by December 1st of 2007, we were to have been on a gold standard. And every time they had a G8 meeting, Bush would tell them, yes, the payments are going to be made this Friday, this next Monday, by Wednesday. And this went on and on. Almost daily, there was a new article being written by somebody. The Queen of England had $4.594 trillion worth of gold stolen from the Bank of England. And then she came over here, if you remember, around the Kentucky Derby to voice her displeasure. Then she and a Saudi prince put $6.2 trillion into a fund to right this ship, and they stole it, and it's in Citibank. Citibank's sitting on $14 trillion. So while they're raping and pillaging the American economy, these guys are sitting on stolen money. You've got the DTCC in New York, which is also sitting on trillions of dollars, and they're just cleaning house. They're just stealing anything that's out there. Now, what do you think people are going to do when they realize that? I mean, you were, in essence, asking me what I thought was going to happen. When they realize that all of this has been stolen, and we gave warnings, you even did at times. I heard you tell your listening audience what was coming down the pike, as you could see it. So it's going to take people not being able to buy food, not being able to feed their kids, not being able to get gasoline to go anywhere, let alone how are they going to get to work. Most of the companies have left the country, and those that are remaining that don't have a workforce are going to have to close their doors. I mean, you're going to have total anarchy on the streets, and you're going to have people raiding the stores and then breaking into houses. I mean, it's going to be total chaos.
Oh,
unless,
go ahead.
Unless somewhere along the lines people start waking up and fast, because they got to do something about this.
And this is where the civil unrest comes in, with this Iraqi brigade that has come back, plus along with the federalized, you know, police departments and Blackwater and so forth. But another thing I want to mention, you know, since I've been off the air for a week, in between I've been helping a friend of mine do some remodeling. But that being said, I happened to catch a show. You know who Lindsay Williams is? I've had him on my program a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Lindsay Williams went up to Alaska, and you know, he rubbed shoulders with the elite, and when they were working on the Alaska pipeline, and he mentioned that he was, you know, through the, his research and investigation he was doing, he was finding out that the silos, you know, I think it's 45 or 50%, maybe no, 60%, I believe, of the food, the grain that supplies the United States with bread and so forth, comes from Colorado and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the silos are empty. The farmers are selling off their harvest, this October, this harvest. They're selling off what they've got, and they're out of grain. They have nothing in the silos. And if you remember, in the Midwest, it was devastated by severe rain and wind and, you know, tornadoes.
Flooding.
And so forth.
Yeah.
Flooding, yes, back in May and June.
Yeah.
So we're going to, you know, coupled along with this financial crisis, we are going to see food shortages. We're going to see the shelves at the grocery stores empty. And this is, we're coming along here, we're talking about probably December, January, in that area. And I had been telling my listening audiences, you know, you need to get prepared. Yes, you need an elevated level of consciousness. Yes, this is bigger than just, you know, guns and so forth. But the bottom line is you need to be prepared because they're going to use food as a weapon. The food issue, the financial issue, but what really, really bothers me, and this is why I've been sitting back here for a week since I've been off the air, Don, and I'm really rethinking my whole position as to broadcasting myself, because I'm wondering what exactly it takes to wake Americans up. If their bank accounts are devastated, are they still going to do nothing? If there's no food on the shelves, are they going to run to the government? The people that got them into this mess to begin with, are they going to run to the government and ask them for help? Are they going to, you know, plead for martial law? Are they going to plead for a police state, for the government, the same people that stole their money, and is going to use food as a weapon to protect them? What are your thoughts on that?
Here I am. I'm the host, and I'm the one being interviewed.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well,
no,
I haven't been on
okay.
Well, I'm trying to hone my, you know, my.
No,
well,
that,
go ahead.
That's
turn
fine.
It around on me. That's all right.
No, it's fine. I'll answer that because I've got definite thoughts on that. Let's step back a moment and let's look at everything that's going on, and what the average American is given for information. Okay, you turn on the TV and you see nothing but a nonstop. And I use this word in quotes, reality shows. They have, they've turned the news into a joke, a total reality show. I mean,
it's nothing more than entertainment. Right.
Well, I can't even call that entertainment.
It's entertainment.
No.
If you go back, well, I mean, I don't know how long it's been since you've been awake, but it really, I've been awake for about 3 years, and it literally is entertainment. It's fluff. It's nothingness. But go ahead. Continue.
Well, yeah, entertainment is at least going to keep your interest up. So it's a very low level of mentality that's being entertained. If you can keep your TV on and not crack up at how ridiculous things are, the level of brainwashing, even in the commercials, is astounding. There's this commercial that I've seen for a product. I'm going to name the product so everybody understands what I'm talking about. It's Swiffer. Okay, you heard me say Swiffer, but the woman says Swiffer, and she's got this way of talking through her nose and just being like totally mind. It's like listening to mind control, listening to this woman talk about Swiffer, 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 over and over. She says it about 100 times in this commercial. And it's so aggravating, and then they go into a phallic enhancer type of drug, okay? Both for men and women, they have these now. And they have these ridiculous commercials that they're showing nonstop. And people used to be outraged just to hear this kind of language on the radio or to hear it in the background in a movie on TV. And now it's just right in front of you on commercials. So the level of brainwashing is to the point where they're forcing homosexuality on us, and they're forcing it on the kids. They're forcing the kids to look at this and accept this as normal. It used to be, somebody would argue the point, is homosexuality a decision somebody makes, or are they born with it? And the homosexuals were all saying, well, I was born like this. This isn't something I learned. I realized that I was like this from the time I was born. Then why do they need to teach it in school? If homosexuals are born, why is it now important for them to teach this, to teach a kid that is straight to become a homosexual? Why is that important? I ask that question in all seriousness. So that is not reality going on in our educational system. This is the mind control. And it's the same thing in how they set up these programs, how they're running the commercials, the little innuendos that they use for developing the characters in these shows. They can make somebody a bigot, they can make somebody a racist, but as long as the audience is laughing when the cue sign comes on, or the light comes on...
Well, they're telling them when to laugh. You know?
Yeah, it's permissible for that to happen, you see? Where it used to be that the FCC would clamp down on that and run them out of town. They'd have all these fines and stuff, but now it's, if they don't have those perversions in the programming, they can't make money. And you know, drug companies are running all the advertising.
You know, so, it's interesting. You know, I took a trip over to Scotland here last month. I was there for 3 weeks. And I noticed, you know, there's a big difference. Now, let me back up a little bit. First of all, I threw my television out, I believe it was about, a year ago last June.
And I caught it. And that's the one I'm using.
You caught it. That's the one you're using. Okay. but I hadn't watched TV, other than maybe once in a while I'd watch a Cubs game at the local sports bar or something. I hadn't watched TV at all. Every once in a while I'd be over somebody's house, get a clip of the news or whatever. But I hadn't watched TV for a year. Now, that being said, I went over to Scotland last month, and I was there for 3 weeks, and I noticed that after 9 o'clock in the U.K., up to 9 o'clock it's family-oriented, and they're very relatively strict on what they say. But after 9 o'clock, anything goes, and I mean anything goes. And I'm talking about all the way down to, you know, don't have sex right on TV. But when I came back... you know, I'm sharing a place with a guy right now who has a TV, and I guess there's some changes that have been made just in the last year that now, even on American television, they're using words that I had never heard before on television. I'm talking about, you know, genitalia and so forth, and swear words and that sort of thing. I mean, it has just become polluted, corrupted. It's almost Luciferian. And, you know, getting back into the commercial, I wanted to throw that in there, but getting back into the commercials, yes, they weave, you know, well, the audience, the voiceovers and the laughter in the sitcoms, they're telling you when to laugh. They're asking you to consult your doctor if you feel that you have, you know, restless leg syndrome, and the side effects of some of those things, I have to laugh, because the side effects for the drug are 6 times worse than what it's trying to correct. Even there, some of the side effects I remember are contemplations of suicide, desires to gamble. I mean, what are they thinking? And then to add insult to injury here, Don, we've got Codex Alimentarius that is literally trying to take all the alternative herbal, you know, not medications, but herbal remedies off the shelf to force us to go to the doctor, to have him tell us what we need, to load us up with all these side effects, and then load us up with another drug to offset the side effects, and on and on and on. I mean, this is an Orwellian dream. Where we're living right now, you know, sans the cameras, which are going up all over the place. But, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. What we're seeing right now, as far as the police state, we're, oh, I don't know, on a scale of 1 to 100, we're probably 65 to 70% there in a total police state. We are being told what to think. We are being told, what to do. We are told how to think. You know, you can't say certain things because it's not politically correct. We've got hate crimes legislation. We just had a gentleman, I can't even remember his name now, Ted Pike, you know, the Paul Revere, the
yes.
Airwaves, came on. He was talking about this gentleman that was arrested under some of the similar circumstances that Ernst Zundel was arrested for. And this is happening all over Europe now. It's happening in Canada. And it's happening in the United States, not on a grand scale. Ernst Zundel was arrested in the United States, but we are literally living in close to a confined police state. And you and I have had this conversation before. You know, part of the reason I went over to Scotland, I was seriously considering leaving this country for good, and circumstances caused me to come back here. But really, there's nowhere to run. There might be a temporary solace somewhere. But the fact of the matter is, coming full circle on this, you're talking about elevated consciousness and all the other things that go into it. We really have to do our due diligence to wake people up. Because, and I said on my program the other day, or excuse me, I called into a show the other day, and I said, you know, you hear these old terms, you know, it's like it's 10 seconds to midnight, or it's 5 seconds to midnight. It's about 1/10 of 1 second to midnight right now. They have pretty much slapped the last nail in the coffin with this financial bailout, and we are there. And if we don't turn it around now, and I'm saying very, very soon, it's over, Don. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Now, you were talking about these commercials, and I want to just make an analogy here or reference to a fact. You know, they're trying to get rid of natural vitamins. You know, they're trying to have them completely wiped off the market, that if we get vitamins, it'll be through a prescription, and it'll be a fraction of the potency.
Don't forget 10 times as expensive. Yes.
Yes, yeah. It'll be much more expensive, too. And I heard a recent commercial about some blood pressure medication. This is another new one that came out. Now, this is with them taking bona fide herbs or bona fide vitamins off the market, and bastardizing them for their purpose. And they got this new medicine that came out, and they're talking about the side effects, which you mentioned. And the guy in the commercial twice is actually spending more time on the side effects than he is on the benefits of the medicine. And he goes into this monologue about if you're taking this medicine and you or your loved one experiences blindness or deafness, immediately call your doctor. Now, stop and think. Let's say it's me. I'm taking the medicine, and I'm blind and deaf. Am I even going to hear the commercial? Am I going to see the commercial or hear it if I'm blind and deaf? But let's say that I have a loved one there with me that's telling me to call my doctor because I'm blind and deaf. How are they going to get the message to me?
What is she doing, slapping you up the side of the head and shoving a phone in your ear?
I got to find the phone, don't I? I got to figure out what the doctor's number is. I mean, it makes no sense. People, are you not listening to the claptrap that they're throwing at us? That's the point I'm making. It's insanity this guy's saying. Who the hell is he talking to?
Okay, but as long as you want to go back to this, let's explore this a little bit deeper. Now, again, I want to go back to Scotland. I paid very close attention to the commercials over there. And you know what they reminded me of? Before I left, I watched a movie. One of my listeners sent me a movie. It's an old movie. It's made in 1987. It had Robert Urich and Kris Kristofferson. And the movie was called America, and it was America with a K. It's where we've been taken over. But he recorded, it's about a 15-hour miniseries. And he recorded it all the way through. And this was made 21 years ago, okay? And he recorded all the commercials as well. And the commercials were as entertaining as the movie, actually. Because I was watching these commercials, and they are nothing like they are now. And remember, it was, 2001, where George Bush, you know, signed the legislation that made the pharmaceutical companies exempt from lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Where they could really just, you know, pull down the curtain and go great guns to do whatever they want to do. Henceforth is why you're seeing these weird commercials on there, you know, call your doctor if you think you have this. But prior to that, the commercials were here in 1987, they were like they are in the UK. Now, you won't see any of these kind of commercials in the UK. You'll see commercials for shampoo, and you'll see commercials for nail polish, you'll see commercials for anything and everything, but you won't see any of this stuff going on in the UK. The same thing that was happening here in 1987. Now, one interesting commercial that I saw, there was a guy who was about 30, I would say he was late 30s, and he had a receding hairline. And he was advertising Listerman. And he said, you know, I'm in my late 30s now, and I'm really worried about a receding hairline, but I'm even more worried about a receding gum line. That's why I use Listerman. Listerman is loaded with fluoride, and I could have cavities in my gum line I don't even see. That's why I just drink this stuff like, or something of that nature. Drink it like water. And he was advertising fluoride.
Hmm.
Now they don't do that anymore. I don't see that commercial on anymore. But this is how naive people were even then. They didn't know anything about fluoride. They thought, it prevents cavities. But I watched that commercial almost fall off my chair. They have been doing this to us for a long time, but they have gotten increasingly more sophisticated in the methods of which they do it. And let's toss into the mix here now, Don, that the waves that are coming out of the television set, what do you call them? The flicker rate. You know, you drive down the street, you look, and you know, in the windows, and you see this blue flicker rate going all the way down the street. And that's a form of hypnosis. It puts the brain in a lower level of consciousness so they can subject you with this stuff. And I don't know about you, but, you know, if I'm sitting, when I had a TV, and I'm sitting watching a movie, and somebody come and interrupt me, it would kind of jerk me, and it would aggravate me a little bit. Because, you know, you get absorbed into it. But what I realized is that it's because your brain is going into a lower level of consciousness and it is subjected to that stuff. And this is all a part of the grand scheme. People, you know, fluoride in the water and you know, hypnotizing you at a television and reality shows and all this stuff has created a society of zombie-like creatures. And I know you've noticed that.
Yes. Well, this, you see, there's a bit of, a metaphor in this, in that, or irony, in a sense, because they are creating the reality. This is not a reality. This is something they are creating. It's not reality as it is in the universe.
It is an illusion of a reality.
Yes, exactly.
Now we live in a reality. You're talking about consciousness. And by the way, I've heard a few of your shows, and you know, I'd say on a scale of 1 to 20, your consciousness level is maybe a 15 and mine is a 3, you know. but I'm highly more conscious than a lot of people walking around on the street. That being said, they have formed, and very cleverly, they have formed an illusion that people think is a reality, but it is literally nothing more than an illusion. The reality is, and I equate it with more like Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, because when you wake up to what's really going on, you're now living in a nightmare that you can no longer wake up from.
Mm-hmm.
And to wake anybody else up that is in that illusion, you're welcoming them into your own nightmare, because you cannot unlearn what you've already learned.
Yes.
But before, and what's that old saying, before, there has to be pain before there is a epiphany or something like that. Okay, you have to experience the pain. You have to go through the bad before, you know, the good comes out. And that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at a sociological crash, a financial crash. We're looking at literally a totalitarian fascist police state that if we do not wake up and, you know, expand our consciousness and welcome in a new reality and get rid of these vermin, then we are doomed to literally live in a prison, a world prison. This is where, and you had spoken before, and we can get esoteric if you'd like. I can't, but I know you can go there. Anyway, we're talking about, you know, an expanded level of consciousness. It's like there's a pure spiritual truth that these people hide from. Their entire being, their entire agenda is to create this false illusion, and it's all based upon everything that is, you know, 100% or 180 degrees bipolar from truth, from pureness, from love, from, you know, peace. It is to create an utter, continual, perpetual chaos within a human being, perpetual sense of fear, perpetual sense of almost childlike, you know, looking at the government as your parent and looking at them as to what to do.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. In fact, you're bringing to mind an experience I had a couple of weeks ago. I was reading Fritz Springmeier's book, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, and I'm looking at a drawing associated with the Rothschild family. And as I'm looking at this drawing, this flash of consciousness sweeps over me, and I understood the whole reality of all of this New World Order, Illuminati, secret societies. The whole thing just came to me in one fell swoop, one moment, one flash of consciousness that said, these people are totally devoid of spirit, and the only place they can turn to mimic anything spiritual is to Satan or Lucifer, whatever name you want to give him, but the dark side. And that's why everything they do is so treacherous and so opposite of God, because they are totally devoid of spirit, real, genuine spirit.
And you've hit on a good point there. And that point is, and I believe it was Laura Knight Jadzik, I had her on my program. She lives in France now. I had her on last year.
Yeah.
She was talking about there's the 4 or 5% of the population that is psychopathic. But, and I go a step beyond that, these people are, you're right, they're totally devoid of any kind of soul or consciousness, and they could, the only thing they can do is mimic what they think we are.
Mm-hmm.
And act like they have, and just like Bill Clinton, I feel your pain. No, he doesn't. He doesn't have a clue what our pain is. But they mimic our pain, our sense of concern, and they play that on us. They use us for their own best interest. And as we see, just, you know, going back to this bailout, I cannot fathom for the life of me how the average American Joe Sixpack cannot see what they're doing to this nation as a whole. If you're employed in a profession and you watch your portfolio shrinking by the day when they just finished telling you that this is going to solve the problem, would you not be concerned? And if you're not concerned, what is wrong with you? Now, let's take it a step further. We've got two candidates running for office. We've got John McCain on the one side and Barack Obama on the other. We've got Joe Biden. We've already been down the rabbit hole on this. I don't know how much your listening audience knows about this. We've talked about it on my shows numerous times. But John McCain picked Sarah Palin as her running mate. Now, have you seen any of the clips of Sarah Palin being interviewed on...
yeah, if you can call it that. It's like watching Saturday Night Live, actually, you know. Mad TV, though, but...
If it wasn't so serious or so tragic, it would be hilarious. How in the world... I mean, I visualize these people, you know, the top 300 or the Bilderberg, whoever they are, okay, the core entity here. I visualize them sitting in a room, you know, around this big boardroom, laughing at us and saying, "Let's see what kind of a reaction we'll have to this. I got an idea. Let's appoint Sarah Palin as the vice presidential candidate, and let's see how many Americans buy it." And then you're gonna get this whole, you know, room full of people, stadium full of people, and they all got their signs because they're women or whatever, or they, you know, they have an autistic child, and they're all shouting, and they all want Sarah Palin to be the vice president, and they're, you know, they're swinging the vote over towards McCain. I mean, they're playing on our emotions. What's the matter with America? What, you know, what consciousness have we lost? What sense of culture have we lost? What happened to this country? Go back 50 years. You know, we were naive back then, but it just seems to get generationally, incrementally worse, to the point where the candidates are downright laughable, and society still can't see it, Don.
Yeah, this is why I started this conversation out on what's going on the boob tube, because this fiasco and this melodrama, I don't know what else to call it. It's like a cartoon, really. Watching this thing that they're calling a campaign, an election, this is dysfunctionality to the max. I can make more sense out of what went on the Pee Wee Herman show, Pee Wee's Playhouse, if you remember that, where he had talking furniture and you know, he rode his bicycle, and it was sort of like watching Pee Wee's Big Adventure, the movie, only it was on CBS. It actually made more sense, and it was more believable than what we're watching right now. These people are, we know they're not Americans. We know they're phonies.
Did you see the clip where John McCain was making a speech not too long ago? And I quote, he said, "My fellow," and he was speaking to the audience, "my fellow prisoners." I mean,
I missed that one.
Oh, this is, I mean, it was, I heard on another show, Dave Von Kleist, I think it was Power Hour or something.
My fellow prisoner.
My fellow prisoners. They throw this stuff out here, and you have to take a step back and take a deep breath and say, wait a minute, is this a code word that they're throwing out here? Or is he that stupid to come out with that? And I believe, really, that they toss it out there just to see if they can get away with it, and then their handlers on the other end are just rolling off their chair laughing because the people are still clapping. I mean, it's beyond, you know, as I said, I threw out my TV. Now, I used to watch, you know, oh, this way back when, you know, Richard Pryor, I used to watch the comedy shows and so forth. What do they call it? HBO comedy thing that would come on once a week. And if I turn on the television now and I look at a debate, for example, a debate between Joe Biden and Sarah Palin, it's nothing more than a comedy routine. They do not hit any issues whatsoever. Some of the questions that were presented to Sarah Palin by Katie Couric and some others, the answers would be so moronic that I just sit there in awe. I'm speechless that the American public could even buy into this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, help me out here. What do we do? What you know, you can't vote. I don't know about you, but I can't vote for evil. You know, people say, well, I don't want
Obama
in office.
Candidate.
Yeah, you write in a candidate, which I don't think does any good. Or Ron Paul now has endorsed Chuck Baldwin, who I guess is pretty close to the same issues. He's close to the same on the issues as Ron Paul is. But that being said, you know, and I heard on another show earlier tonight, I believe, where they were saying that, well, you know, it'd be good if he gets, Joel Skousen said that it'll be good if he gets 10% of the vote. Well, why? Because he says it sends a message. What kind of message does that send? It still means that either McCain or Obama is going to win, which is more of the same. You know, the hour is late. We have got to do something now. We can't send a message and wait for the next 4 years.
They're not getting the messages now, okay? So that's plain and simple. Look at Ron Paul. Don't you find it rather ironic that all throughout his campaign, when he was a candidate running for the presidency, they didn't see fit to give him the press, and now that all of this fiasco has come to light, and he's out of the picture, he's not running, they have him on almost every day of the week. They're talking to him, oh, you were right. You were right about everything, about the Federal Reserve and about the derivatives and hedge funds and about Social Security, and you were right about all these things.
Well, why don't they make him the candidate then if he was so right?
Well, you see, they've been bribed to put out their propaganda, which leads us back to what we were talking about before, is that they're spoon-feeding us this insanity, knowing full well that they've decided what's going on. This is just playing out. It's like a tug-of-war between idiots, village idiots. And it's, you know, I had something interesting. This is very enlightening, too, and it makes you think, because I've almost tripped on my words a few times just because of the similarities. You know, we have this boogeyman that they created on 9/11 called Osama bin Laden, even though he'd been an asset of the CIA since 1986 at least, went during the Russian-Afghanistan war. And my friend happened to see a billboard that said Obama Biden, but read it as Osama bin Laden. Yeah, it's that close. I mean, look at the play on words there in these names. Do you think it's an accident or?
No, I honestly believe they're sitting in that boardroom and by, you know, along that big long table laughing their butts off. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking, Phil Berg has filed, you know, he's filed a lawsuit, you know, for Obama to produce his birth certificate. I mean, Jerome yes. Corsi went over to Kenya and got arrested for crying out loud, deported out of the country. He had to bribe his way out of the country because he was getting too close to something that they don't want him to know, which proves, and you've already gone down the rabbit hole on this, Don, we know that Barack Obama is not a United States, he was not born in the United States, which totally disqualifies him from being a presidential candidate. Now, that brings a question to mind, what, and I say what, not do you think, I say what will be in your mind? And I'm sorry for interviewing you again here, but what in your mind, what in your mind will be, because we know it, there's going to be one, what will be the October surprise this year?
Well, if anybody out there who's feeling or sensing what kind of game is being played here, you can't trust anything the administration is saying, from whether or not they're Christians, whether or not they're making these payments, these international payments, or whether or not they're actually righting the ship that from which they've stolen all the money, it's going to be more lies. It appears that they're going to try to pull a fast one in the end and declare martial law and declare a dictatorship. Now, do I wish that upon anybody? No, but that's what it appears to be. That appears to be the direction it's headed. That's no big secret. Every Patriot Network's talked about that. Now, is that what I see in my mind, in my intention, or is that what I talk about on this show? You know, you have to recognize what they're capable of doing. Look at what they're doing. They're capable of putting Obama and McCain out as the only viable candidates to run this country. Are these people sick or what? What warped mind would pick people like that with the corrupt connections that they have? You got a guy that had parking tickets out there for 20 years and graduated with honors at Harvard University and got 8 tickets in one day. These tickets were out there for 20 years, and it wasn't until he ran for the presidency, announced his candidacy, that somebody went and paid the tickets and got a deal on that. Anybody else would have gone to prison for that. And they're putting this guy out. Oh yeah, change you can believe in, change we need.
Well, you know
this is insanity. And the guy's got accusations of homosexuality and major drug use against him, and murder at the church. 3 people were died at this church that he went to, that he mysteriously all of a sudden bowed out of, that they say he went to for 20 years, but in reality he didn't even go there 16 years. You got the tickets and the church mixed up.
Well, I heard Larry Sinclair on Jeff Wren's program tonight, and matter of fact, just before I came on here, and I had Larry on my show as well. Larry shook hands with John McCain and Cindy McCain, and which was nice. So Jeff Wren's had him up for an hour. At any rate, the allegations that were made, the circumstances behind what happened to Larry Sinclair. There's no question in my mind that Barack Obama did as Larry Sinclair accused him. He had an illicit affair with Larry Sinclair. No question in my mind about it. Because the day I had Larry Sinclair on my show, you know, and I've told you many times that my website gets hit with the feds all the time. But that mm-hmm. particular day, my website was hit 11 times, 7 times by Homeland Security. It was hit twice by Barack Obama's campaign headquarters in Chicago, and it was hit twice by Israel. So they were paying close attention, very close attention, to Larry Sinclair. And ironically, Larry Sinclair held a press conference on June 18th, and he was arrested. The allegations were that he was making threats against the Delaware Attorney General. Interestingly enough, the Delaware Attorney General just happened to be Beau Biden, which is Joe Biden's son. The charges were mysteriously dismissed, and all of a sudden they nominate Joe Biden as the vice presidential candidate. Talk about back scratching and favors. You know,
this is
what I say, and we're talking about elevated consciousness here. We see this stuff because we're awake. We've got the glasses. We put them on. We can see. But the rest of this country cannot see, and this is what concerns me. Now, talking about Obama again, you know, if we are unfortunate enough to have that man enter the White House, he is going to make it mandatory that, and they're not calling it a draft, but they're calling it not voluntary. It's compulsory service. You know, you have to spend 2 or 4 years or whatever it is, and women as well. Our daughters are going to be not drafted, but they're going to have this compulsory government service, which means they're going to ship our daughters over to Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, wherever they want to go next.
This is a guy that was saying that we should have peace. He would promote peace, if I remember correctly. I mean, I've heard him contradict himself so much. But, you know, he contradicts what's in his autobiography, too. That's a given. There's nothing that he has published that is even the truth. And who the hell is he? He's not an American. He has no business here. Period. I don't care what the media puts out. I'll go back to square one, Michael. He is not an American. And for that matter, McCain is not an American. He was he's not born in a hospital that didn't exist until about seven years after the so-called birth.
In their world, and I've given this considerable thought, in their world, it doesn't matter because these people aren't Americans even if they were born here. They have
That's
no sovereignty
right.
to this country. They are internationalists, they're globalists, they're elite, they could care less about this country. And this is where they've got the majority of the American people, because the majority of the American people, the vast majority, they feel that these people think like them. They think that these people have, you know, patriotism and, you know, mom's apple pie and Chevrolet and, you know, America, love it or leave it, that sort of thing. These people could care less about this country. And this is where the problem comes in. Because until we can shake these people, the American people, up to realize what these people are all about and who they are, and even who they are is in question. I mean, we can go there, you know, as far as clones or, you know, reptilians. There's something wrong with these people. Something seriously wrong with these people. But until we can solve that issue, you know, we've talked about the elevated consciousness. We've talked about the spirituality and so forth. There has to be a movement that is so strong, that has to come so fast to overwhelm these people. Now, you know, I've heard we've got to vote all of the incumbents out of office. Well, that's easier said than done because the voting machines are all controlled now. We're not going to vote them out of office even if we want to. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I think with this bailout, there's a lot of people that woke up over this, Don. But when we go in and we see this election, and we see the same thing happening that we saw in 2006, you know, 51% to 49%. When you know that everybody you talk to, nobody voted Republican. They wanted to oust him because the Democrats were talking about ending the war. Pelosi was talking about impeaching George Bush. And as soon as she got into office, impeachment was off the table.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she looked like she had just been let off the hook real fast when they passed this bailout. She was grinning from ear to ear, giddy over it.
All these people were smiling. All of them were smiling. And you know, as again, I say, we have the glasses on. We can see. But the vast majority of the American public cannot. And herein lies the problem. And it's not just us. You know, we're talk show hosts, and people come and they listen to us talk, and they pick up bits and pieces, and some people believe us, and some people, you know, are skeptics or whatever. But it's not up to just us, Don. And this is why, you know, taking this break I have from broadcasting right now, I'm really sitting back and reflecting on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, is it enough? Is it working? And up to this point, I haven't seen it working well enough.
Well, you brought up a good point. And if I can ask you a question, sort of rhetorically here, okay? This we know what's going on. You and I know this, and many of the listening audience know what's going on. And we have these people out there that just think everything is fine. Let's say that were true. Why would George H.W. Bush make a statement like this, and what do you think he meant by this? When he says, if the people really knew what we have done, they would hang us from the lampposts. What did he mean when he made that statement?
What he meant was what they were doing was so dastardly and nefarious that if the American people knew what he did, they would prosecute him, or they would, you know, run him out of town. Well, they wouldn't run him out of town on a rail, but he'd still be resting in prison. And, you know, it's ironic that you say that, because in watching some of the commercials that I saw, do you know what I saw just the other night? George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton back on television together asking for money again to help out the African people. Now, I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you. I know that George Bush and Bill Clinton are friends. They vacation together. They do business together. They are two of the biggest crooks on this planet. And I don't know how many millions of dollars they take in from these mind-numbed Americans, but I would venture to guess that even if 10% got to where it was going, that would be a godsend, because these guys aren't going to let... I mean, I can't believe that people can't see. And I can see it in their eyes. When they come on TV now and I see them looking into the camera, I can look into their eyes and I can see that they're lying through their teeth.
But if you can get past the shape-shifting, too.
Well, okay, that being said as well. But, I mean, look at their history. You know, this whole thing, going back to the bailout again and the derivatives and the CDOs, this isn't just George Bush. That legislation was imposed, that bill was signed by Bill Clinton in 1993. That's when this whole thing started. Okay, so people say, well, George Bush, he's the reason. No. These people are in cahoots together. Okay, they've been tag-teaming us for a long time. And, you know, our backs are against the wall now. Well, the point I was going to make is that, yes, we're talk show hosts and we're out here talking about this, but the listening audience needs to at least invite their friends, neighbors, relatives, barber, their, you know, the doctor, their lawyer, their beautician, or whatever, to have a listen to shows like yours, other Patriot networks that are out there, because that's the only place that they're going to get the truth. You know, these Rush Limbaugh, I haven't heard him in a long time, but man's paid, he has a 10-year contract, like $285 million. These people are paid these enormous sums of money to lie to you because they're good at it. I'm talking to the listening audience here. You know, the Rush Limbaughs and the Bill O'Reillys. These people are paid liars. They are shills.
I heard Limbaugh's new contract is like $400 million.
But you know what? Going back, coming full circle, going back to square one, 400 million FRNs. They print this off of a press. And this is what really blows my mind, is that all it is a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of this, these, you know, quadrillions of dollars and $850 billion for bailouts and putting it on the national debt and all this good stuff, it's all paper. It's all intrinsic. And all we would have to do, Don, as Ron Paul says, with the stroke of a pen, just get rid of the Federal Reserve and go back to a treasury currency, just like John Kennedy tried to do back in 1960, what was it, two? And all this would end. We're paying interest off our labor on money, on an FRN that has no intrinsic value.
Well, we're supposed to be on a gold currency, and we were supposed to be on one since December 1st of last year. Here it is, you know, December's going to roll around in a couple more months, and we're still not there yet. So this is why you're witnessing what you're witnessing on a world scale, that... you know, we owe so much money to foreign countries, and these are not choices we made. Anyone who is sane in the business world would be avoiding making these kinds of decisions, knowing that they'd be fired instantly. for being corrupt and incompetent.
Well, wait just a minute here. You say, well, we're supposed to have been on a gold standard. Well, the first question out of my mind, or out of my mouth, is who owns the gold? Where's the gold? Where's it located?
Well, yeah, it's all over the world, but it's been stolen, number one. I can tell you a lot of it's in Indonesia, a lot of it's in Japan, and in the Philippines, all over the place in the Philippines. They stole gold that ended up going to Argentina. And,
well, they're doing the same thing with gold. They're continuing to suppress the gold market with these gold contracts, which are nothing. They are nothing more. They're nothing different than an FRN. There's only mm-hmm. so much physical gold in the world, okay? Mm-hmm. And these people are putting out gold contracts. It's a fiction. It's a facade. It's the same thing as the collateralized debt obligations. It's the
yes.
same thing as the derivatives. This mm-hmm. is how they are forcing the actual physical gold market to stay low so they can continue to buy it up. Now,
yes.
sooner or later, this illusion has to end. And I believe that we're seeing it right now. Now, the stock market rebounded today, went up 930 some odd points. Okay, time for America to go back to sleep. You know, everybody was worried about, you know, so it came up 937 points. So everybody they go, whew, boy, I was worried about it for a minute. I can go to sleep now.
Well, it's got to go up because they just bought all this cheap stock, right, when it went down.
Well, that's true. You know, you question who it was that bought that stock. Everybody's looking to get in a bargain. But no, it's the main players that are going in there and buying it up. But again, I go back to square one. You know, the last thing that leaders do before they, implode an economy, they loot the nation is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing to us right now. People don't understand that they are going to lose everything that they worked for all their lives. I read some of this bill, this bailout bill, and some of the legislation, some of the sections in that bill are absolutely horrifying as to what their plans are. You know, and it slips through. It was originally a three-page bill. It went to what, Don, 383 pages or something like that?
I heard 457 is the last count I heard.
Well, it's no different than the Patriot Act. They didn't let them read it, number one, and there's such horrific legislation that's buried in there, and pork barrel spending and so forth. It's just, it's unconscionable. But this is being done now with regularity, and the American public, as long as they have their six-pack and they can watch their widescreen TV and Dancing with the Stars, they don't even care. That's what scares me. Is because I've been to several other countries, and I've seen the culture. I've been to Mexico, I've been to the Philippines, I've been to Europe, and so forth. There is no other country in the world that I have been to that their populace will sleep like we do. The mindset of the American people is that they're free, and their freedom is, you know, based on the size of their bank account. They're free, they've always been free, they always will be free, it could never happen here. And that mindset is very, very dangerous because we've only been a free nation for a very, very short period of time. This nation hasn't literally been a free nation since, what, 1863, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Well, was it 1861 that Abraham Lincoln declared martial law? He signed executive order number 100 that put us under martial law, and they never repealed that. It's still in existence. Were you aware of that?
Yeah, I've heard that before. In fact, they even took him out, you know, as if that was going to keep it in.
Probably because he was going to repeal it when the war was over. They said, oh, we can't let you do that.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, he was already printing greenbacks, and that was his intention.
Right, and then the guy that assassinated him, John Wilkes Booth, you know, Morgan Sorensen, I had him on my program, wrote a book, I don't remember the name of the book now, but he says that John Wilkes Booth, you know, they didn't catch John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth lived out his life and died in, you know, what, 1929 or something like that. Or
mm-hmm.
1919, yeah. He married a woman that was from India. And so, you know, we go back to history. 95% of what we learned in school was all, you know, history is written by the winners. 95% of everything we learned in school was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so henceforth, people like you and I, we take the initiative to go really find out what happened. And you know, as diligent as doing in doing that as anybody that I've ever seen. You know, far away, you know, better than I am. But the more we learn about what we thought we knew, we realize that we don't know anything. Henceforth, the reason why we're in the position we're in now, because we've been so diverted with our entertainment faculties and our television sets and our, you know, our Atari games and our boats and our, you know, lake cottages or whatever, and thinking that we're free, we've allowed a small percentage of vermin to permeate through this nation and literally destroy it. And that's why I say that if we don't make a diligent effort right now, and I mean right now, to get it back and wake up people like we've never done before, we are going to see a darkness come over this nation that is going to be as, well, it'll be tantamount to the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm. You know, I ask people from time to time, I get, you know, you run into that doubter, doubting Thomas, that has the glazed over eyes the moment you start talking about fluorides and tap water. And without getting into the critical issues, when you ask just a rhetorical question, like, if someone, a stranger, broke into your house in the middle of the night and you felt that your family was in danger, would you protect your family, or would you just allow this person to murder your kids, or maybe kidnap one of them and steal whatever you have of value from your house and maybe rough your wife up a little bit, and maybe even you? Would you allow that to occur, or would you defend your family? Oh, of course I would defend my family, they'll respond. Okay, well, what about if somebody did that to your country? Would you defend your country? Oh, well, you know, that's why we have army, or, you know, we have laws to protect that from happening. See, these people, they don't realize what's going on. They don't see what's happening on the country level, because the real issue is not about your house right now. It's about your country. The house is next.
Well, but this society is being gang raped on a regular basis, but it's become so commonplace for them that they don't even feel it. And I'll give an example. Well, all right, gas prices. Now, just a few months ago, they were $3.50 a gallon, right?
Even
last
four,
time I looked,
yeah.
Well, you know, upwards of four, getting close to $4 a gallon. Okay, so the gas prices have come down now, I think 15% to 18% over the last, 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The price of oil has come down about 40%. Now, tell me why the price of gas doesn't come down. You know, 15% decrease in the price of gas, 40% decrease in the price of oil per barrel. What the American public doesn't realize is they're getting literally financially raped at the gas pumps. But they've had it done to them so many times, it's
mm-hmm.
commonplace. They don't even think about it. They think they're getting a deal because gas now is $3 a gallon as opposed to, you know, $4 a gallon or
mm-hmm.
$3.80 or whatever the heck it is. And if you go back in, you know, through the last 30, 35 years, these oil companies have been doing this to us for, well, ever since the Nixon administration. I can remember before the oil embargo in 1973, which was orchestrated in itself. I'm not even going to go there. But gas. Do you remember when gas prices were 35 cents a gallon?
I remember when they were 19 cents a gallon.
I didn't realize that you were that old. No. Okay, well,
you were pumping the gas back then, Michael. No.
Well, that's true. But what they do with the income taxes, and that's another issue I'm going to touch on here, but what they do with everything is they keep us to a point where They keep us on a treadmill to a point where we're not to the point of rioting. We're just to the point where we literally have to work from 8 to faint to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And then back in the late 50s, early 60s, and the women's lib movement came in, and all of a sudden the woman went to work, got twice as much taxes out of you. Okay, now we got them both on the treadmill, destroying families by putting the kids in daycare. And then I've heard people say, well, you know, we could stop this thing. If everybody just stopped paying income tax, they wouldn't have any more money. No, that's not true. they would still continue doing exactly what they're doing because the income tax that they collect out of all of America doesn't even pay the interest on the national debt. Matter of fact, it hasn't paid the interest on the national debt since the Grace Commission report came out in the Reagan administration in 1984.
And that's all an illusion, too. And that money that's paying those taxes, it comes from the illusion. The bottom line is that they're selling out the infrastructure from underneath our feet. And so you have the World Bank owning the Great Lakes or all the ports along a particular coastline, which is even though they tried to pull this Hutchison-Whampoa deal, if somebody went in there and looked, I'm sure you're going to see that probably the Bahamas is somehow in control, and that power has shifted over to the British Crown in some manner because they're fronting the money. The Queen of England is fronting money, which is keeping this country afloat so that the foreign banks stay afloat. This is the whole reason, again, behind this bailout. And I don't mean to go back to that other than to just say all this stuff is connected. It's always about the money, Michael, as you well know. It doesn't matter what scenario they create. It's always about the money. Them picking Joe Biden is about the money. Them picking Sarah Palin to run is about the money.
Let me stop you right there for just a moment, okay? And as much as I don't like John McCain, and as much as I don't like his handlers, and we've been down that road, I have to say that, strategically speaking, that was a brilliant move to appoint Sarah Palin as a vice presidential running candidate. Now, for a number of reasons, all right, because I believe it's swung some of the Democratic voters that were mad that Barack Obama got the nominations as opposed to Hillary Clinton. It swung the woman's vote over to John McCain because there was a woman on the ticket. But also she's got a son, her oldest son, that is being deployed to Iraq, which obviously she's clueless about what Iraq's all about anyway. But that being said, she's also a beautiful woman, which swings a lot of votes for the testosterone-filled men. And also she has an autistic child, okay, which tugs the heartstrings of many people who have mentally challenged children. So that was a brilliant move in itself. Aside from the fact that she's a ditz and she's an idiot, okay, it wasn't enough, though, because I believe Barack Obama is still leading by about 10 points in the polls. But we still have to remember the October surprise. And that could be Barack Obama with the Phil Berg lawsuit that they oust him from the candidacy. It could be the Larry Sinclair thing with the illicit affair, which, by the way, Phil Berg was on. He did a program, I think it was on Fox, and it hit a mainstream television station. I can't remember what it was, a local one. I can't remember what town it was in. But at any rate, you know, the October surprise is they're going to do something because the Republicans are failing in the polls now.
Yeah, it could be a false flag event is most likely what
I don't, in all honesty, Don, I don't think that these people aren't. I believe there's enough people awake and there's enough people watching now that they would have to be very clever about pulling off another false flag, because I think there's too many people. You know, they take polls as well. And there was a poll that was as high as 83% or something like that. People weren't buying the 9/11 thing anymore.
Yeah, but remember, too, that they create these polls, that these polls are created out of the same place they create the Federal Reserve notes. And that's a Tavistock ploy. When do they ever ask anyone a question that will bring about a truthful answer about anything? They never give you that option to actually answer the question with a truthful answer. It's always, what spin do you want? You know, they would ask the question, they wouldn't ask the audience, Do you feel that something in John McCain's past is shows that he's corrupt? Or is there something in Barack Obama's past that shows he's corrupt? No, they'll ask you, are you for John McCain or Barack Obama? Who would be the better president? When neither one of them would be a good president. It's an issue of accepting the reality show that they're putting in front of us.
Right, but when they ask you the question, they'll only allow you to check one box or the other. You can't, there's no right-in box there, you see.
Yes, but there's no correct answer box either. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, and the only reason for the polls is to find out if they need to put out any further propaganda on whichever one they want to elevate.
Yeah, the intention of the poll is mass mind control from the get-go. It may not appear to you at the beginning, but when you see how many people are affected by this, and they put out the poll question and they put out the poll figures. Yet, have you ever been polled? Do you know anyone who's been polled? I know no one. And everybody I've ever talked to says they know no one that's been polled. Yet they're coming up with all these figures. Are these the Nielsen families? You know?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I've gone into, these internet polls that you have. I remember there was a poll that was taken, and it was an international poll that was taken about the presidency. You know, vote for the candidate, and this is back during the primaries when you had, however many there were on both sides of the aisle, and, vote for which one you think would make the best president. And Ron Paul at that time beat them so bad. It seems to me like his numbers outdid all of the other candidates on both sides of the aisle combined. That's how one-sided it was.
Yeah, I think some polls he had 87% of the vote in some places.
Right, and so that being said, you look at that and you say, okay, so here, you've got this guy that gets 87% of the polls, and they know that, and then they put him up in the primaries, they ask him a couple of softball questions, they give him about 2 minutes out of an hour, and somehow or another, John McCain, who was probably let's face it, as far as being slick or as far as being literate or, look at the other candidates that were up there on the stage with him. I can't even remember the names now. I mean, I've got
well, Huckabee was there, and
Huckabee was the Mormon guy. I mean, I can't even remember his name anymore. Mitt Romney. There you go. But you look at these guys who were up on the stage. Even Rudy Giuliani. Okay.
Who was a drag queen? Yeah. Who was a drag queen?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you look at these guys and you look at McCain. You put those guys up next to McCain. How in the world could McCain have gotten into the position? I mean, he didn't answer. He didn't win any of those debates. You know, his answers were absurd. He looked like a sock puppet.
He was chosen, Michael, before the debates ever happened.
Well, that's sure obvious. He was. But that's my point, is that you look at the candidates that were running against him, and you scratch your head and you say, how could that happen? And I'm looking at from the point of view, the dumbed down American. How can the American people actually believe that this guy, out of all those other guys, was the most viable candidate? It's impossible. So how could the American public believe that this entire election isn't being controlled? And this is what I'm having such a tough time wrapping my mind around, and this is why I'm having such a tough time deciding whether to make a commitment to go back into broadcasting or just be a guest on shows such as yours and other people's, Don, is because maybe I'm just frustrated with the entire endeavor. I spent 2 years doing this, and I've been getting a slew of emails lately. Well, you got to get back on the air right away. You know how many people you woke up and so forth? Well, however many I woke up, it isn't enough, Don. It's not near enough.
Michael, have you ever watched the audience on America's Funniest Home Videos? You ever see the audience, how they clap and how they respond to what's going on in the show? I'm serious. Have you ever noticed that? It's sort of like everybody is high on Cheese Whiz or something. Like they've been snorting a Cheese Whiz can.
And your point is?
Okay, now... That's what these campaign snippets look like. When they're on the road and they're making these speeches and they have this stacked audience behind them sitting on bleachers and in the crowd, you know, the crowds that they put there. These people are totally under mind control watching these people. You cannot be listening to this nonsensical rhetoric that they're putting out, which makes absolutely no sense and resembles nothing going on in the world. And they're treating this like these are great revelations, like Moses coming down with another 10 or 20 commandments. You know?
Well, let me ask you this. Are you saying to me, and by the way, I've seen this before. It seems to me like there were some clips that I was running across where I caught one guy that was in the audience, and it was obvious that they were paying him or something because he was in an audience that was, he asked a question, and I think he asked a question, you know, in a debate with Mitt Romney. And then later on, in another debate, was the same guy. And he was being asked, and he was, you know, he was a delegator, he was, you know, a supporter of Mitt Romney. And then on the next debate, it was the same guy, and he was a supporter for, Fred Thompson or somebody. Okay, but your point, I get your point. All of these people are put there, and they're either paid off or they're mind controlled, and they're there to do nothing more than to influence the people that are watching them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the event. These people all, on a cue, they all raise their sign, they all put their hands up and they're screaming, and you see young people, you see a mixed audience in the States. Everybody's got this feces-eating grin on their face, okay?
Yeah.
and they're in La La Land. How can you be listening? You're listening to a guy talking down to you like daddy. And I'm speaking about Obama. He's got this. He's reprimanding the audience. He's reprimanding the American people. What gives this guy the right to do that? He's not an American. Was it because the Illuminati picked him out? The New World Order people want us to be brainwashed by this? And so we're just supposed to accept it. Are we? Michael, I don't even watch these speeches on TV. I see this and the replays and the news shows or whatever. If I spend 5 minutes, I can't stand it. You know? So I'm getting little snippets of this stuff and just quickly ascertaining what's going on the screen. You don't have to be watching this hour after hour. I can imagine the impact it has on somebody sitting there listening to a debate where there's nothing being debated, where there's no topic of substance, there's no issues being discussed, other than do they appreciate the other person? You know, this is all crap, and it has nothing to do with the problems of the world. And there are no solutions being presented, and they're not going to be able to handle any problem.
I'll give you that. There are no issues. The serious issues aren't being touched on at all. But I have a question here. You know, at what point, you know, taking into consideration Barack Obama's nefarious and questionable business dealings, his personal issues with, you know, Larry Sinclair and so forth, at what point, how far back was it that the powers that be started grooming this guy for this position? Was it 10 years? Was it 15 years? Was it 20 years? When did they start this?
I'd say probably about 25, 27 years ago.
And a good question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, from the time he went to Occidental College, just to get him acclimated to, what goes on in the mainland. An education or anything like that.
Another good question to ask is, McCain knows about the alleged illicit affair, okay, and Barack Obama has never stepped up to the plate, never addressed the issues, but his campaign headquarters has made several threats against Larry Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that John McCain, with the slams that Barack Obama has been putting forth to John McCain, why doesn't John McCain step up to the plate and ask Barack Obama that question straight up? Is it out of fear?
Well, he doesn't want anybody bringing up the point that he wasn't born in a hospital that didn't exist in Coca-Cola, Panama Canal Zone.
But is do both of these candidates already know who's going to win?
I'm fairly certain that they've planned it. It's planned out. Now, whether the Illuminati decide to change it because of the way the Bush cabal is playing ball with them right now, that's hard to say. Because when this was decided, they were expecting to get money, and they're not getting it. These guys have stolen it. They've stolen it from us, and they're stealing it from the other thieves. So what they're dealing with now is they're come up on an international scale. And it's the same people that have picked these candidates for us. This has nothing to do with what our people would choose for ourselves, and it has nothing to do with what the rest of the world wants. This is a bunch of madmen just controlling everything with insanity. Don't you find it strange that France has a Hungarian running their country? You know, Sarkozy's not French, he's Hungarian.
No, but I believe that there are certain nations in that G7 summit that are looking. They don't want to go along with this program.
Oh, I know that. Yeah,
they're looking for other alternatives here. I mean, it looks to me like there is an atmosphere of deep concern here for the alleged New World Order, at least this faction of the New World Order. I think that they're in serious trouble. I think what's happening now, they weren't expecting this, and I think it's way out of control, and I think I'm thinking that a number of these countries are second-guessing this and saying, whoa, wait a minute, we don't want any part of this. And Russia is, well, look at what, George Bush did to Putin at the G8 summit. Okay,
yeah.
You know, he thought, well, what did he say about Putin? He said something about, I looked into his eyes and I know he's...
I could see his soul.
I could see his soul, but Putin didn't go along with the program. And so they treated him and George Bush and Condi Rice both treated Putin like cow crap ever since then, because Putin doesn't want to go along with the program. But China doesn't want to go along with the program either. I see a sense of deep concern with these people. They are, they're losing control. And I think a lot of it had to do with the internet. I think there's a bunch of 70, 80, 90 year old men. You know that David Rockefeller is 93 years old?
Yeah, he's up
these
there.
These people are out there. You know, they want to implement this plan probably before David Rockefeller passes on because he wants to see it in his lifetime. But I think that they've lost control of it, and I think the gloves are off. I think they're going, full tilt to get this done, and I think it's falling apart before in front of their eyes. So they're desperate, and desperate people do desperate things. So we're looking at a very, very critical month here, and I know we don't have a lot of time left in this program, but this is a very, very critical month. Even more so than the point between the elections November 4th and the taking of office in January 20th, this month is a very critical month, Don. And
yeah.
we need to be vigilant. We need to keep our eyes open, and we need to be watching very closely. And we need to be listening to everything that they say and do, because they, you know, how many weapons they have in their arsenal. I watch the market every day. I've been paying very close attention to any time. I mean, I find it very difficult to even watch George Bush or listen to him.
Yeah.
But I watch. I don't listen to what he says, but I watch his demeanor. I watch his face. You notice how he has that smirk. He smirks when he's lying, and every time he says something, I watch that smirk. And I try to pick up the key words, because they have a language all their own. They have hand signals. There are certain words that they use that mean something different to them than they do to us. I'll give you an example. He made a statement the other day that the government was acting on this crisis, right? The key word is acting.
Mm-hmm.
They're not moving on this crisis. They're acting. They're playing like they're doing something about it. They're playing a role. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is to listen to their language very closely, and you'll start picking up little inconsistencies, sentences that don't quite make sense. It's not a sentence that you and I would say. It's a sentence that they're saying to convey something to their own, if you will. And that's part of the secret society Illuminati thing. Have you ever gone down the rabbit hole on Skull and Bones?
Yeah, I have. And they're not the only Yale group that really has any power, but they like you to think that they are. But it's pretty sadistic, just the general criteria for belonging, you know.
No, well, you remember back when Tim Russert interviewed George Bush and also John Kerry when they were running against each other. Cousins, by the way. I mean, what a coincidence.
Yeah,
he asked them both the same question. Tell us about Skull and Bones, a secret society. And they shrugged it off of, well, it's so secret I can't talk about it. You know, and they went off to something else. I mean, he just softballed the whole thing. But if you go down the rabbit hole on Skull and Bones, you realize who these people are. This is a Luciferian cult, is what it is. But
well, they say cousins, Michael, and that may be true, but it's likely another lie like everything else. I mean, you know, you've got Dick Cheney's wife claiming she's related to Barack Obama. Come on, let's get real here. You know, these people are out to lunch with their relations. Hillary Clinton being related to Madonna and Celine Dion and Brad Pitt? Come on.
Where did you pick this up?
This has been the claptrap for months. They went through two or three solid months of this in the middle of the summer about.
Look, now I'm going to warn you ahead of time. We don't have time left in the program to go start going through bloodlines here.
Oh yeah,
go ahead.
I'm just saying it's ridiculous. You know, the claptrap. It's like they can throw these names out because Brad Pitt is a popular actor that now he's related to Hillary Clinton, and Laura Cheney is.
What did they do? When they do a genealogy thing on their family tree? What?
If her name is Laura Cheney, I can't even remember Cheney's wife's name. Is it Laura or? I know it's Laura Bush. I mean, all of these people are like related to each other. Okay, the only way I can see that is through their reptilian bloodline, and I've said that before. They all have to be reptilians. That's the only way. You know, so they're making this claim to being African, related to Africans. Well, you know what? Now it's coming out that, and I've said he's probably Indonesian. So they're really related to Indonesians. Now, how are they willing to just shift like that with the wind?
Well, maybe again, that could be another code that we know nothing about. They could be related in this reptilian world. Who knows? And I can go into a whole other aspect with the technology end of it and the secret that the Illuminati cover up. You know, that goes back in the ancient times. You go back into the pyramids and you start seeing these things written. They know about all this stuff. They know about the flying saucers and all that stuff that were written. You know, ingrained into the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they treat it. You know, as far as we're concerned, they tell us it's nonsense. Well, I don't believe that. I believe that there are ancient scrolls, scriptures, that sort of thing that go back tens of thousands of years that are secret and privy only to the specific group of people. And that, is it bloodlines that causes it? I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know what the core is. I don't know what the bond is that holds these people together. Could be something other than bloodlines. I don't know. But I do know, or I do believe, that there is a secret that these people are born into, that they are raised with, that they are trained with, that they are educated by, and that they are sworn to secrecy, just like the oaths of Freemasonry. And it is what separates them from us, and they look at us like, you know, cattle or, you know, human resources or whatever you want to call it. That being said, we could do another show on just that. But
yeah.
It is evident to me, and I've studied this not extensively, but I've looked into it with Tex Mars, Codex Alimentarius, just the signs that they use, the code words that they use when they get on television and they make a speech. You can watch their voice inflections or listen to their voice inflections and watch their demeanor and certain signals that they make or you know, movements that they make. And they are communicating a double language. It's very well thought out. It's choreographed. It's orchestrated. And they do this to send double messages. One to the public that they think they're listening to one thing, and one to their brethren in this mm-hmm. secret society that's saying something totally different. And this is part of their, I don't know, what would you call it? Almost a, what's that magician? Merlin. It's the trick that they are playing. And they take delight in doing this. And they're congratulated by each other, by how good they are at deceiving people. Mm-hmm. What kind of a sick, warped, psychopathic, soulless individual could do something like that? It would have to be somebody that would have been trained since birth to be, told that they're going to be put in this position.
Yeah. Or they have to be a full-blown reptilian.
Pretty much. That being said, and we've talked about this before, I had Sophia Smallstrom on my, you've had her on your show as well, and she says that, and I believe you might have mentioned this too, that, Dolly the Sheep that was cloned in, 1984, and then remember there was this big thing that came out, don't worry about it, we're not going to clone humans. Well, I'm sure that they've been cloning humans for a long time, probably back even before Dolly the Sheep. They just had to bring that out to let us know that they had the ability to clone a sheep. But I believe that they've been cloning human beings for a long time. Henceforth, could be part of the reason why you heard that Saddam Hussein had so many doubles. I don't know. I'm just, a lot of it's speculation. I just throw it all out there and let people glean from it what they will. But I know there's something. And I'll just leave it like this, Don. Whatever it is, these people aren't like us. End of story. And we've got to stop them before it's too late, right?
Yes. Well, Michael, right. You're going to be on the show again on the 22nd. So, I hope to take this topic up again, and maybe we'll be so fortunate that nothing major will have transpired in the interim.
We can only pray. Because it's going to be a very interesting next 3 weeks, Don.
Yes, I know it will. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to your next visit. And I hope you enjoyed it yourself. Did you have a good time?
Or? Oh, of course. I always have a good time when I come on your program. Absolutely. And, maybe we can go into a little more of that next week. I'd look forward to that.
Yes, and keep us posted, too, with your radio career, in case something comes up,
I can tell you this: I'm not in any big hurry, Don. I watch some of these different offers, and I'm not saying this to be egotistical, but I see some of these offers coming in and so forth, and I look at them, but I'm not real anxious to make that commitment because we take our commitments very seriously,
mm-hmm.
and. It's a serious commitment to do that, and I'm not sure that I want to commit to... I know right now I don't want to commit to a daily show. I might do a weekend show or something for the time being, but not right now. I'm not going to do a daily show right now.
Now, we are going to be coming out with the Infiltrator show very soon, so you're going to be a part of that. So.
I'll be a part of that. I won't be doing it every day, though.
Yeah, well, hopefully none of us will.
Okay.
But it's a great team that we're putting together, and you're going
to
be part of that. So
we're looking forward to that.
So I thank you, and let's say goodnight to our listening audience, and I'll see you next time.
All right.
Folks,
you have been
listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Michael Herzog. You can visit his website at theamericanawakening.org. And you can also catch some of his archives on my website, directlightproductions.com. Just click on Evident Footprints. The archives are free. Also, subscribe or consider subscribing to the BBS archives. You can listen to the whole network for one nominal fee for a whole year. And with that, I'd like to thank Donald Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and Seth Hendrick on the sound. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.